Welcome back, everyone. Words of wisdom there from Bob Marley. Don't worry. And we'll put them in the context of the UFO stuff. A lot of folks think or suspect that that society, in particular American society, has sort of been conditioned to accept this over a long period of time. UFO movies and TV programs and abduction specials and books and all this stuff in the media getting us ready for ultimate truth. However, years ago, as we're waiting to go to the phones, years ago there was a report that came out from the Brookings Institute that had a little bit in it that mentioned that there could be severe upheavals, social collapse, if our contact with a superior intelligence were confirmed. Richard Dolan, our guest, you've read that, of course.
That came out circa 1960.
And did you do you find it odd that that was included in that report?
Well, it's extremely noteworthy for that reason, because the Brookings Institute does not typically write about matters pertaining to the revelation of an extraterrestrial reality. So it's something you remember. I think when we talk about, are we being prepared by Hollywood, presumably in conjunction with the government? Are they trying to prepare us for the reality of UFOs or not? I go back and forth on this. Now, you could look at it that they are sort of broaching the issue, and sometimes in a very serious fashion at times, and other times not so much. On the other hand, you could also say that, again, this is a form of what I keep calling inoculation. That is, you put some truth out there, but you put it out in such a manner that it doesn't get taken seriously, i.e. in the form of entertainment. I think of a TV show like The X-Files when it was running about 10 years ago. Now, that was a show that was really cool. It had great, great scripts, great acting, and it dealt with frequently with the UFO cover-up in a very interesting way. I don't know the behind-the-scenes story of this. What did Chris Carter know or not? But I do know that if someone were to bring up themes of cover-up and conspiracy, that one rejoinder would be that someone could say, you've been watching too many X-Files. So that, in other words, this stuff gets out there, it makes it out into popular culture, but the real question that I ask myself is it truly preparing us or not? And when you talk to people in ordinary life, I do this all the time in my, I'm not doing UFO lectures 24/7, I deal with people in the regular world. And what I find is that people are interested in this topic, but they only have a very superficial knowledge about it. And so people will ask me, I guess you like aliens. You like UFOs. That's the way they put it. I'm thinking, well, I don't know if like is the way I would put it. I'm interested in it. But you find that people have a very surface-level take on this. And so when they actually get brought into the real depth of this field, I don't think that a lot of them are all that ready as they may think that they are.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's and whether we are being conditioned on purpose as part of some master plan, or it's just happening this way because UFOs and aliens are good box office and always have been, the effect is basically the same.
That's right. I'm so sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
I feel for the most part we're not being educated. I feel for the most part that we are being kept kind of dumb. I mean, just look at the rest of our culture. How well prepared, how knowledgeable is the average person about the nature of their world? I'll guarantee you, most men probably could tell you more about the nuances of the National Football League than they could about it, global politics, and you know, women have their interests as well, but they're not the same as dealing with the, you know, geopolitical financial issues. We deal with these things when they happen upon us. So we deal with the financial crisis when it crashes down upon us. But how much knowledge is really there?
Yeah,
I don't really think a lot. There was a good study done during the first Gulf War by the University of Colorado on media. How much media did you watch on the Gulf War, and how knowledgeable were you at the issues? And what they found was that there was a kind of inverse relationship between the amount of TV news you watched and how knowledgeable about the issues of the Gulf War you were. So the more CNN and Wolf Blitzer you watched, conversely, the less likely you were to know about certain key issues like where would you find Jordan on a map, Or what did President Bush mean when he said no linkage, which was a big thing at the time in 1990, no linkage between the Israeli issue and the Palestinian issue in Iraq. People were less likely to know the more TV news they watched. And this was the conclusion was, well, this was a great failure of TV journalism. Okay, well, that's fine, but maybe it isn't a failure at all. If we look at TV as a medium to draw in viewers, which is what it's supposed to do, I mean, that's the whole point, is to get viewers. Is it really to educate, or is it maybe to make people feel that they're getting educated? And where the real issues are beginning, it's not just TV, it's all the media, really, I think we can include here. So I don't know if we're being prepared. I think what I see is a lot of superficial knowledge about a lot of things and not really any kind of depth.
Let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, John in Long Island. Good morning, John. John, are you there?
Yes. How are you doing today, George?
We're doing fine. What, you got a question for Richard Dolan?
Yeah, I got a quick comment and one question here. You said, if I heard you correctly, your father was a retired New York City cop, too?
You got it, man. That's right. I grew up in Brentwood, Long Island.
I used to have a girlfriend involved, right off Motor Parkway. Back in the day. My father's also a retired police sergeant, Jamaica, Queens. 20.
Hey, cool.
He did the 68 to 88. But my question is, how far can a president really go without being worried about treason or worried about assassination to really push the to really go crazy, to really find out the truth about Roswell or could be any other issue about UFOs? How far can, to the extreme, how far can they go?
That's a great question. Well, I remember chatting with Dr. Stephen Greer, who told me that he had knowledge about the Jimmy Carter situation, in which what he said was that Carter's life would have been in danger had he tried to go farther with the issue. That's the claim. Look, presidents get killed. Did John F. Kennedy actually get killed by a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald? Well, I don't think so. I think a lot of people don't think so. But something happened to cause him to get killed as an inside job, so to speak. I wonder, you know, recently about the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan back in 1981. I have to tell you, I wonder if there is something else going on there. So, I mean, your question is a valid one. How far will he go? I don't think that he'll go anywhere until he gets permission from the people who are behind him. No president is an autocrat. Every president comes in supported by powerful interests. And this is no different with Barack Obama than any other president we've had.
So John, thanks.
Yeah, I agree with John's implication here, which is that he's only going to go as far as he's allowed to go.
John, thanks for the call. Maybe you and Richard Dolan have to swap stories about girlfriends in Long Island one of these days. We're going to have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of your questions for Richard Dolan on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for staying with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest, a fascinating discussion about UFOs, cover-ups, disinformation, Richard Dolan, author of UFOs and the National Security State, soon to be a second volume coming out in the spring, and we're all looking forward to it. Back to the phones now. Wildcard line, Michael in Albany, New York. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I wanted to ask Richard what... when he's talking about extraterrestrials, is he also including dimensional travelers?
Good question. I cannot rule that out at all. There are things about what we seem to have gathered about them that makes me think that they're not just people from another planet. I don't know exactly where their origin is. Are they from another solar system or part of this galaxy, or do they inhabit a different part of this reality? I think it's entirely possible that both of those solutions may have some truth to it. So
anything in the paper trail or documents that refer to dimensional stuff that you've ever seen?
Nothing that I've seen, no.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Thanks for the call. Another call from New York. You're popular in New York this morning, Richard.
Hey, Dan. My neck of the woods.
Dan in Montrose, New York. Hi, Dan.
Good evening. How are you?
Hello, Dan.
Good morning. George Knapp and Richard Dolan, hello.
Hi.
Howdy.
Listen, there's something I want to say. I'm not going to mention any names, but I wanted to get your take on the present leader of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, which I'm a member of. In 05, they mentioned something very profound that I felt was long overdue. I got something to say it, and I'd like to read it. It's very short. It's three things.
Okay.
It says what MUFON knows to be true after 36 years. Of course, now we're down to 39. One, UFOs are real. We are not alone. Two, our universe is teeming with life. The scientific data shows that our planet is being visited by an intelligence on a regular basis. Three, the final one, UFOs, unconventional flying objects, which I thought that was good to state. Unconventional flying objects deserve scientific study. UFOs display technology that, if understood and used wisely, could benefit our planet and greatly advance all mankind. And this is by John Schussler and his people, MUFON International Director. And I thought that that was a very good statement, long overdue. They put it on their website. And John Schussler twice agreed with me that it should have been put in their MUFON journal. I think it should be put in there all the time, if not just once. Now, they've never put it in their MUFON journal. And I've spoken to their one of the people there of MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it fell on deaf ears. Now, they not only have they never put it in their journal, they've stripped it off their website.
It's off the website? I didn't know that.
Pardon me?
I didn't know it was off the website. You know, I was part of I was invited by MUFON about a year and a half ago to participate in a study that dealt exactly with these issues. It was a very restricted group. We met in Colorado. I talked with the current leader of MUFON. John Schussler was there also. He had recently been retired as head of MUFON. And this was going to be part of a MUFON initiative to promote this kind of core understanding of the UFO reality. So I'm surprised that it's off the website.
Yeah, I don't know that you read too much into it. It may be just an oversight of some sort, because, I mean, that's basically a mission statement for MUFON, always has been.
Yeah, and it's more important that it's on the website, in my opinion, than the journal. The journal's circulation is a couple of thousand at the most, whereas at the website, you know, I'm sure they're going to reach more people.
But you know what, Dan? We're in contact with James Carrion, who's the head of MUFON now. We'll mention it to him, see what he says.
Yeah,
thanks for
absolutely.
Your call. They appreciate it. We're going to go to Jesse in Santa Barbara on the wild card line. Jesse, how you doing? Jesse is not there. East of the Rockies, Minnie in Kentucky.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. No, I'm not doing too well. If a Martian showed up on my doorstep right now, I'd pity the fool. Yeah, I'm in that kind of a mood for geopolitical reasons. But anyhow, hon, to get to my point, I think that, you know, you've presented kind of a punch bowl of little goodies and interesting things, but some of it's starting to get confusing. When you mention people like Brzezinski and David Rockefeller, these people are basically the kind of heart and soul of Bilderbergers and elite groups. And they're the ones that are pleading for information on the Martian, or, you know, on the spacemen. Well, without their purse strings, we wouldn't have black ops. So, you know, what about this? I mean, this doesn't make any sense.
I don't think you heard Richard's position on this correctly. Go ahead, Richard.
Maybe not.
Well, yeah, what I have been saying, what I would continue to say is that those people have ultimate control over the direction of what we're doing on a behind-the-scenes level. They manage the political process, not just of this country, but I think of all countries. So I'm not really sure what the discrepancy you're seeing in. I mean, Brzezinski is very tight right now with Barack Obama. And, in fact, what I'm suggesting is that if Obama is a disclosure president, it's only going to be because he's got the backing of the elites and that they'll have some reason for wanting him to make this disclosure.
But what I'm asking you, though, is, and I've heard this before, that David Rockefeller keeps wanting disclosure.
No, not David Rockefeller.
It's Lawrence Rockefeller.
Lawrence Rockefeller. Now, they're all the brothers, okay? Lawrence is recently deceased. Lawrence Rockefeller did, this is very important history, during the beginning of the Clinton administration, push very hard for a disclosure, some kind of disclosure initiative with the Clinton White House. And in fact, Lawrence Rockefeller met with Hillary Clinton, certainly on this issue at his ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, possibly met with Bill Clinton about this directly too, and spoke with high-level members of Clinton's staff. It's a good question to ask, why was Lawrence Rockefeller so interested in getting this out? Was he acting on behalf of the elite, or was he acting in a private capacity? People can do that. And the one thing that I would mention about the elite is I don't believe necessarily that they're this monolithic entity. I think that there are always factions involved, whether it's ancient Rome with Caesar and Cicero, or today with other elites. They don't all always share the same opinion.
Maybe so even in the same family, then, Lawrence Rockefeller seeing it differently than David.
So I would leave it open as that there are members on the inside who are sympathetic to what we're trying to do. And as far as with the Rockefeller Initiative, it's quite possible that Lawrence Rockefeller wanted this out. One reason to think he was interested, by the way, is that his estates, the Rockefeller estates, are in Pocantico, New York, lower New York State. During the early 1980s, during what was called the Hudson Valley wave of sightings, this is right there. This is their backyard. Now, if UFOs are silently flying over your house or my house, we might not be able to do much about it. But if you're a Rockefeller, well, then you could do something about it. And I have wondered if part of that was playing into it, but can't know.
Minnie, does that answer your question? Minnie's gone.
Okay. Well, I did the best I could.
She is there. Minnie, you still there?
Yes.
Does that answer your question?
It does, but there's one little aside. You know, before he said that they took presidents that they thought were mentally stable to handle things, and he mentioned Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, and I think old man Bush. And I had to laugh, you know. These are the guys that they considered. I mean, I thought that was funny. So I thought, you know, you might enjoy.
Yeah,
you made me laugh. Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks, Minnie. Yeah, I guess it's a matter of degrees who they decide is sane enough to handle it.
Well, it wasn't all mental stability. That was one thing that this person mentioned. He, I don't think he was implying that all of the presidents were mentally unstable, but he did mention the whole question that not all were considered mentally reliable. I think might have been a better way to put it.
Well, you think about Reagan, too. You know, the story that's floated around about him whispering something at the White House when the screening of E.T., the movie.
Right.
Did you ever find anything that suggests that was true?
Well, the story comes from Jamie Chandray, actually, who got it, he says, from Steven Spielberg when they were both in Japan in the early 80s. Chandray was the person to whom the MJ-12 documents originally were leaked at the end of 1984, and he knew Steven Spielberg. They both did movies, and they were both in Japan at the same time. And according to Chandray, he chatted with Spielberg privately, and this is what Steven Spielberg said, which was that at the filming of the E.T. movie in 1983 at the Reagan White House, that Reagan privately went up to Spielberg and said, "There aren't six people in this whole room who know how true that story is."
Richard Dolan, stick around. We'll come back with more calls as we go into the break with one of the great all-time rock and roll alien songs. Stay with us on Coast to Coast. That's The Boss, Bruce Springsteen. The song is The Rising, and it's sort of appropriate for where our country is right now. We're kind of heading into a new era, a new time, a lot of hope in the country. And one of the concerns and questions is whether or not part of the new mix is going to be disclosure about UFOs. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions for our guest, Richard Dolan. Plus, I want to ask him about something he mentioned early in the show, and that's about the secret space program that he thinks may really exist out there. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for staying with us, everyone. We have a couple of minutes left with Richard Dolan, author of The UFOs and the National Security State, soon to be a sequel. Richard, you mentioned early in the interview about a secret space program and the possibility, you believe it's entirely possible we do have one. What kind of evidence, what level of confidence do you have in saying that?
I think that we probably have a secret space program, if for no other reason that there have been a large number of anomalies videotaped in space in upper atmosphere that are freely available for anyone to see. Unfortunately, a gentleman died a year ago who collected a lot of this data. His name is Jeffrey Challender. Jeff's website is still up, however. It's called projectprove.com. And what Jeff did, he was disabled, and he spent a lot of his time collecting, downloading NASA videos, live links, also from the European Space Agency and also from Russia and most recently China. And he would put them on his site. And Jeff was not the kind of guy who would just say, oh, I believe everything that I see and it's all extraterrestrial. But there are, he had a very good analytical approach, I think, to these events. But what stands out is that there are so many strange things that are on these videos, and you can just watch them for yourself at projectprove.com. So I think that there's evidence for anomalous activity in space. Now, the question is this our anomalous activity, or is it not our anomalous activity? But it seems to me either way, this provides a very good reason to believe that there is a secret program. For example, if it's not ours, if there are extraterrestrials who are flitting about doing U-turns in space, that's one video, then you'd have to assume that there would be secret components to our own space program to try to deal with that in a covert manner. The other reason I think that there could very well be a secret space program probably is, there's two other reasons I can think of off the top, is the case of Gary McKinnon. Now, Gary McKinnon was a kind of X-Files-style British hacker who a number of years ago from Britain was looking for evidence of a UFO cover-up, and he hacked into the website of the U.S. Space Command around 2000 and found a list of officers' names, which he said were under the heading of non-terrestrial officers. He also found a list of what he called fleet-to-fleet transfers and a list of ship names that, when you looked up the ship names, none of them were U.S. Navy ships. Now, he can't prove this. Gary McKinnon wasn't what you'd call the most organized hacker who ever lived. It almost seemed like he was joyriding his way through the defense establishment.
But well, literally, I think he smoked a lot of weed along the way.
He did, and he couldn't remember stuff, and that's what he said. But he got arrested over 5 years ago, and he's about to be extradited, and he's going to do some serious time over this. By the way, the media never ever discusses anymore that he was the UFO hacker. He's just a defense hacker. I've noticed that the whole UFO part has gone away. The other reason I think there may be a secret space program is if there are genuine anomalies on Mars or the moon, as many have argued, this would certainly be a prime motivation for developing a secret component to your space program so that you can investigate these in private without having prying eyes. There have been some leaks over many years saying that we have indeed a secret space program, and there's a lot of those, and some came from Clark McClellan, who has many decades over at NASA, who has now publicly been talking about this, about his.
And is this? Do you cover this in the sequel, in volume two?
A little bit in this one, and a lot of it's going to come up in the third volume, because a lot of it, I think, in terms of the history, really breaks out in the 1990s. But yeah, I've got some issues relevant to that in this forthcoming book.
All right, back to the phones. West of the Rockies, John in Colorado. John, you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning to both of you, George and Richard.
Hey, John.
It's a pleasure to be talking with you. I had a couple comments to pass by, and I wanted to hear your feedback on it. Number one, Roswell. It's my strong feeling that government has been, due to the activity with the nuclear testing and the atom bombs and all that stuff down in southwestern states, that the government was catching on to these UFOs who were frequently being seen around these test sites. And I have a strong feeling that the government actually shot down one or two or three or several, including the Roswell one. Another comment along with that is I believe that these travelers come here and they use a very powerful but passive type of energy. What I'm trying to say is when they come here, they're basically peaceful. And so they're not, like, armed to the teeth. If they were, they probably could just wipe this planet out in half a second. The government, I don't believe, is ever going to be able to stop this process. I know that it seems like they're in control to some people, but they are not. And my last comment is, in the Bible, Jesus said two things that should open our eyes to these this process that's going on. He said, "In my house are many mansions. If it wasn't true, I would not have told you." And he also said to Peter, "I have flocks that you know not of." And when we begin to think about those two statements, we can begin to realize how big and massive this whole thing really is. And that's all for tonight. Thank you.
Well, that's a bit to chew on there,
yeah.
John. Thanks for that. Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you, John. I thought those are a lot of insightful comments that you had. Let me just take one at a time. I've got them all written down here. Regarding Roswell, were those objects shot down? I think it's possible. There has been some talk over the years that they may have been hit with a kind of directed radar array that was new to them at the time, that they may have been vulnerable to. People find it crazy that some super advanced interstellar species would become vulnerable to primitive human weapons, but it's certainly possible that a craft that is designed for going through space may have vulnerabilities in our own atmosphere, at least upon initial contact. I would not rule it out, although certainly we can't say that we know for sure. Whether they're peaceful or not, I've never been persuaded by the argument that just because they haven't wiped us out means that they're peaceful. You know, we don't wipe out our farm animals or natural wildlife, at least completely. We use them and we exploit them, and I think it's entirely possible that they treat us the way we would want to treat farm animals. I think that's a possibility. As far as not being able to stop this process, I think that's a very valid point of view, although I would qualify it and say that our own technology has gone so rapidly, advanced so quickly. It's not linear. We're making it, it's like a quantum jump. And it's very possible that in the near future we may achieve certain breakthroughs in terms of artificial intelligence, computing,
quantum computers.
Exactly, that we may find ourselves closer to their level than we suspect, and we may be a real pain in the neck to these people. So I don't know about that. At least up till now, we haven't been able to stop them. The Bible quotes I thought were interesting. The quote of many mansions, certainly I was very familiar with that. And it's worth noting to people who are of a very strong religious orientation, biblical orientation, who look on the UFO topic as almost evil and certainly not biblical, that there are ways of looking at it, even through the Bible, that open one up to the world of UFO research.
I tell you, Richard, I've interviewed a lot of religious leaders over the years about this thing, and the response, no matter what the faith or denomination, has always been the same, is that they viewed it as in a positive way, that it was almost a testament to the greater glory of God that there would be other people out there, and they also viewed it as, hey, there are some alien souls to save.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the long history of Christianity is replete with examples of denying the reality of this. 500 years ago, a guy named Giordano Bruno was burned alive because he believed that there was life out in the stars. But it's true. I mean, the church leaders of all denominations are not, you know, we're not living in that era. There are a lot of people out there, though, who I think have a still a fairly rigid view of this. And you go down, you know, in a lot of cultures, I think there's still some resistance.
Well, the Vatican has certainly changed its tune, or at least has been much more open about it.
That's been really big news. I think the Vatican, you know, you get the 1-2 punch of Corrado Balducci, who recently is deceased, but for years was very close to John Paul II and would publicly talk about extraterrestrials. You can't have someone that high up talk again and again about this without some kind of tacit approval, I think.
From the Pope.
Right, exactly. I think so. And then more recently, the statement from the Vatican's chief astronomer saying that, you know, life elsewhere is not incompatible with Catholic doctrine. There's something going on there. You don't get statements like these from large bureaucratic institutions without these people knowing that they have backing from someone.
We live in interesting times. First-time caller, Sam in Brooklyn. How you doing, Sam?
I'm very good, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello, Sam.
How are you? I have a very quick question. As far as UFO cholera concern, it seems to me that it's only, at least for what I've heard so far, it seems to me it's only the developed nations that this occurrences like UFO sightings usually happen. Is there any evidence at all that African governments are also involved in this cover-up at all?
Okay, you said African governments?
Yes.
Well, there is a lot of evidence that UFO encounters with African militaries occur just like they occur everywhere else. So those governments are involved. For example, there was a phenomenally interesting encounter in 1987 in Ghana.
Okay.
With the Ghana Air Force. Going
That's
after,
where I'm from, by the way.
Are you?
Really?
Well,
yes, sir.
that's pretty cool. I've got this covered in my next book.
Okay.
A fascinating encounter that we have military documents, our own U.S. Defense documents have records of this.
Is this one of the Project Moondust documents?
No, I don't think it's a Moondust one. Okay. It's but it is a, I think it's a DIA, I don't have it in front of me, a Defense Intelligence document, I think. But I do know we have it, and it described a Ghana Air Force pilot who was considered extremely reliable, very top-level kind of guy, who was involved in an encounter, aerial encounter with UFOs, and it got a lot of attention high up in his own government. That's Ghana. There's a lot of cases from South Africa where the South African Air Force was involved, and a number of other African nations we know of. The reason that Africa and also Asia for many years, we haven't historically had as many UFO reports from those regions. I think the only reason for this is that during the 1950s and 60s and those early years, those regions didn't have an infrastructure for reporting it very easily. So people would see these things, but they would have no place to report it too easily. And in that kind of a situation, you don't collect as many reports. But there's every evidence showing that the phenomenon is just as active there as it is anywhere else, and that those governments, hey, they're all part of, you know, they're all part of the global international community, and so there's no exceptions here.
Thanks, Sam. We appreciate the call. We're going to go to our international line. Angela, British Columbia, how you doing?
Oh, hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Margaret Thatcher comes to mind. Something very odd that I saw on a television clip.
Okay.
She spoke of the stars when she was still Prime Minister of England. The stars, always follow the stars. It seemed very, very odd. And I thought perhaps it's a small Jewish group that she respected or, you know, some small group that she respected. But now that I am a believer, you know, I also include the UFO subject into that. Just follow the stars. The next time I saw her on the clip, she had her face, the side of her face on the podium, still speaking. Enormous strength. That woman had enormous strength. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on Margaret Thatcher and the UFO question.
Well, very, very interesting point. I have not been aware of that statement. I'm going to start looking at that, though, I can assure you. One thing I'm sure that Margaret Thatcher very likely would have been, had gotten some kind of information on this. And I think it's probable that she did, only because of her position, only because of the position Britain's intelligence agency has in relation to the U.S. It's a very close relationship there. The United States has massive presence over in Britain militarily and in the intelligence field. And British prime ministers historically have been very close to U.S. presidents for most of the decades. So Margaret Thatcher would be, I think, a good candidate, in my view, for someone who would have had knowledge on this. But there's, as far as I can think, there's not a lot that I can come up with in my own mind here that links her directly to this. So that's something that's worth looking into. I think there's something there.
Well, she sure was tight with Reagan, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Angela, thanks for that call. Let's try to get one more call in. Okay, we tried Jesse in Santa Barbara once before. Is Jesse there on a wild card line?
Yeah, I'm here. Jesse in Santa Barbara. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Jesse. Okay.
All right. I have I had two UFO experiences this weekend. I saw one the other day and two tonight. Yeah, the one the other night was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It looked like a strange star in the sky. It caught my attention. Then this white light started to expand to about the size of a little bigger than a pencil eraser. And then it contracted upon itself. It took about 3.5 seconds for this whole process to happen. And then it looked like it just shot right out into space. And I know what things look like when they leave orbit because I'm about 5 miles from Vandenberg Air Force Base, and I see the missiles launch all the time. Now, I saw two more things tonight that were incredible. They were...
Hey, Jesse, it's hard for Richard Dolan to evaluate what you saw. So, you know, he's an historian guy. Can you ask him about this stuff?
Yeah, I can. If anybody's interested in seeing what I saw tonight, speaking of NASA footage, I went on the Internet and looked up sightings for 2008 in November. And for November 16th, today, there are UFO footage captured on the Space Shuttle Endeavour for November 16th, 2008. It looks like what I saw tonight. I'm wondering all kinds of things, like might it be connected with these fires, might it be a smoke screen or whatever. But basically what I want to ask you is, do you think that what I saw from my description is ours or theirs? And
I couldn't say at this point. It really could be either. I think what you may have is a possible breaking story, though. I mean, there could be something there that's worth looking into.
Everybody's inside watching the fires on TV right now.
You've got a couple of days, several days in a row, or close to several days in a row, where you've got this interesting stuff going on there. Do you know if it's related? Do you think it's related to Vandenberg Air Force Base, or do you have any idea?
I have no idea. I mean,
Jesse, we appreciate that call, but we're going to have to go. Richard, it's been a pleasure, man. It's been great to have you on the show.
I love talking to you every single time. I always have a great time hanging out here with you.
You know what? You're going to have to bring the missus and come out to Las Vegas, and you and I will sit around and solve the problems of the world. But it's
great.
Can't wait for the new book to come out, the follow-up to UFOs and the National Security State, due out in the spring, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us then.
Absolutely. Check out keyholepublishing.com. That is my website, and I'll have information on the book as it comes out.
All right, Richard Dolan, thanks very much. And, of course, the links to his website are on the Coast to Coast site. Thanks to all the folks there at Premier Radio. Thank you for joining us, and I'll be back next Sunday. Ian and George will be here in between. Hope you'll tune into them as well. Good night.